very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is
Catfish. Well, let me tell you something. It's a special, special evening. Game of Thrones is back. And because of that, we were able to import, fly all the way from Santa Monica, a special friend of the podcast who's only going to be here for a little bit because I don't have a headphone splitter. Introducing himself is...
It's Mork, everybody. What's up?
Yeah, Mork is here as a surprise to everybody. He's just here so you can hear his dulcet tones. He'll contribute a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, but then he'll have to go, sadly.
Catfish, we are reviewing Season 8, the final season of Game of Thrones, Episode 1, entitled We Don't Know Yet. They'll probably release what the title is in a couple of days or so, maybe in a couple of hours, but they were keeping spoilers on such lockdown that they never released an episode title for this episode. Holy smokes.
Wow, I thought that was it was just untitled for the quote-unquote mistaken release by DirecTV Now 4 hours early, but apparently it still doesn't have an episode. An episode has no name.
An episode has no name. Let's get to it. We've been blathering.
That's what we call it. Let's just call it.
Let's just call
Go
it.
Go ahead.
Let's get to it. What is your ranking out of 10 for this first episode of Season 8 entitled, I don't know. With no title. What's your ranking out of 10?
We've officially decided it's called An Episode Has No Name. And I am going to give it 9.5, what I like to call triple Ds.
Triple Ds?
Yeah. Depressed Dieting Dragons.
Oh, man. You know, they're trying to slim down. They may be like some people. They don't like the North. They don't like the cold. They don't like Jon Snow. Who's to say? But yeah, okay, so why give it that ranking, Catfish?
I mean, first of all, it's the later episodes when they actually are going to tie things together where there will be a chance for disappointment, where I'll be as disappointed as the dragons. But for this episode, it's the first time we're seeing these characters in a year and a half. We got people coming together. I mean, so much juiciness. I mean, to have Arya and the Hound together. Again, and then of course that last shot where the look across Jamie and Bran. Oh my God! It actually would be even better if Bran was still Bran and not the Freakazoid. But you know,
it's a good thing for Jamie that the tower at Winterfell is not handicap accessible.
How terrible. That's the voice of Mork. Catfish, we want Mork's ranking out of 10. Let's hear it and why he gave it that ranking.
All right, Mork, what is your rating?
This episode, I am going to give it what I like to call 8 double Bs.
Double Bs?
Bronze bounties.
All right.
I thought it was a good start, and it was nice seeing the game back together, but that's really all we saw. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. And the ending at the castle with the umber, that was terrifying.
Oh yeah, that was a really good jump scare. Oh my goodness. Now, I mean, eight seems a little bit low. I mean, what do you expect? This is a table setting episode, and yet so much was done. We've got a new thing.
There's only 5 more episodes is the problem. So I was hoping it would be table setting and at least the bread, maybe a little olive oil and balsamic. And we got the chair pulled out, but that was it.
No, I disagree. I think the balsamic was the bomb drop on Jon/Aegon Targaryen.
That's fair. That was definitely seismic.
Okay. All right. And then we got some new information. You know, if you didn't like Sansa beefing with Arya on the last season, well, you get to enjoy Sansa beefing with another strong woman this season. So, all right, Mork, I know there was one more thing you wanted to do besides give it your rating. You, as a loyal listener, always want to give your Joffrey of the Week. Who's your Joffrey of the Week?
Well, it's you, Catfish, for not having some headphones for me.
Wow. It feels a little bit hurtful, and yet it's just an honor to be named a Joffrey of the Week for whatever reason. So I want to thank you.
Actually, you know what? My Joffrey of the Week is going to be HBO for only making 6 of please. I would like at least another 10.
Wow. Okay, so that was it. That was it for Mork. We might hear from Mork later on in the season when we might do an in-person joining together of the forces. But, Bubba, that's enough of the blathering on this side of the continental United States. What was your ranking for tonight's episode entitled An Episode Has No Name?
Catfish, I am going to be what I like to be, the toughest critic. There was so much mm-hmm. that I enjoyed about this episode, but mm-hmm. these reunions, which I loved so, so much, to me, they were short. They were too short, and there were just little developments that held it back from a great ranking. So I'm only going to give this 7, what I like to call double G's out of 10.
Double G's?
Yeah, well, as all Game of Thrones fans know, double G stands for Glover gone. Robert Glover is gone. We're explaining him away with a line like he didn't want to come back. The King of the North should stay in the North. A lot of the things.
And after we so presciently lauded him as one of the most important characters of this season, he wimps out.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I thought there was so much good in this episode, but for some reason, all these reunions, which I wanted a bit more meat on the bone, they were short. They were trying to service everybody, and there were so many great moments in the episode. But for me, only a 7 out of 10. I have great faith. I liked all the reunions, even if I wanted more of them and they were too short. But I have great faith. It's going to be good. Listeners, we want to hear from you. You've heard our rankings out of 10. Go and tell us your rankings out of 10. We're available on Twitter and Instagram at DoublePHQ. That's the word double, the letter P, the letters HQ for headquarters. Facebook.com/DoublePHQ. And of course, YouTube. Your guess is as good as mine. Just search Double P Podcast, Double P Media, and search the Job Free Podcast on YouTube. You'll find us. We love your reviews. We love them so, so much. Our Stitcher reviews have come in as well. We currently have a new ranking on Stitcher. It's 5 out of 5 stars. It's from a user who says, you know, like where it says, fill in your username. It says, no thanks, I'm good. The review is 5 stars. The review says, hilarious. I don't know what it is about these guys, but they crack me up. They are so funny. Good podcast with two delightfully dorky dudes, that's double D's to him, that think outside the box. The most fun podcast out there.
I love it.
Thank you so, so much for season 8, because everybody's so worried. Oh, who's going to survive season 8? Who's going to survive season 8? I've decided, in addition to giving away these wonderful prizes, we're going to have a new category of double L's.
Double L's?
Well, that's what we like to call our loyal listeners. But these new categories is if you give us a comment on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram, on YouTube, you're officially in the You're Gonna Survive Season 8 group. And so I'm going to just go ahead and list them. I'm going to list these wonderful double L listeners who are going to survive Season 8 right now. And if I missed you, just leave us another comment. So I've got double R, Ron Rayner Jr. I've got Nikki Powell, Hank Steinberg. We've got David Gobert, Oscar D. Ramallo. On Twitter, we've got Jonathan Teglin. We've got Holly Hunt Pants. We've got Brutal F. Bill Kava at Terrence Revere. Michael, who's at EndlessMike03. We've got at Alta Marie. We've got Mary Dillpickle. I'm sure that's a real name. Matt Papa.
Yes.
Trugador D. Bermanetter. Uncle Q. Raymond Charles. Iron Trone. Geek Girl Soup. Our great friends. Tia Cookie, the hilarious Canadian. Herf Fuel Librarian. At Cute Poison 10. Chris. And The Empire Strikes Matt. Oh, all you guys are going to survive season 8. If you want to survive...
What about Michael Killey at Mike Killey?
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Catfish. That's what I'm saying. You got to leave us another comment if you want to survive season 8, baby.
All right. He sent us a tweet today. So he's been riding the train with you guys from back in the WW days to now. He said, we are... # the Joffrey of podcasts.
Oh, man. That's...
I mean, come on. He is all in. He is on the list to survive.
Surviving season 8. Congratulations to all you guys. And we do this podcast just to interact with you double L's. We love you.
And just as a reminder, I need to tweet out a picture of this, or maybe I'll send it to the double PHQ. I have got these, too. There was a great art exhibit here where this person did little two, they're like two side-by-side drawings, like 4 inches by 4 inches, super cute. And one of them is of Jon Snow and the other one is of the Night King.
Ooh.
And so those are going to be one of the prizes we give away too. I actually have one of Ash, two separate Ashes, and it's really cool. So that's going to be one of the prizes too. And those people on that list are up in the running for it. So, Bubba, let's get right to the episode. Gosh, we have a real episode we can talk about for the first time in a year and a half. And I think that we might as well, you know, sometimes we split the episodes into little portions, but there weren't really that many little portions. Everything's up in the north. So why don't we just go through it chronologically?
All right. Well, let's start where we all started, where the show began way back in season one. Admittedly, the show began beyond the wall with the cold open, but it really began in Winterfell, and that's where so many of our characters are gathering or going.
But wait, Bubba.
Yeah.
I thought for sure you were going to talk about this because you love talking about the opening credits and what was missing from the opening credits.
Essos. A lot of things was missing from the opening
there
credits.
There was no wall in the opening credits.
Did you love it? I love this updated design. I kind of wish they had done them for every season, given it a new twist. The credits actually start north of the wall. You know, it has the awesome symbols that we see, and there are actually new images on the symbols. The symbols originally told the story of Robert's Rebellion and the stag taking down the dragon and all this stuff, but now they've totally revamped these sigils. And so we've got dragons, and we fly in north of the wall, headed south. Then we spin around as we go through the wall. I thought it was incredible. We go to the last hearth, which is a location we saw today, which really didn't have, you know, it's going to need a lot of upkeep for the poor umbers.
There were so few locations. We actually got to the crypts, for God's sakes.
The crypts of Winterfell. I loved it. They're going to be so important, you would assume. Man, oh man, so good.
That's because that's where Joffrey's hiding, in the crypt.
And then we left the crypts of Winterfell, and, you know, we made it all the way down to, you know, where King's Landing, where we flew into the dungeons there, where we saw the dragon and Qyburn's awesome scorpion, which is gonna shoot it. I loved these new opens. I thought it was great. I thought it was exciting. It is weird that we're now, you know, they're constantly heading from north to south, so your orientation is completely messed up, but I liked it a lot. Well, any other thoughts you had, because these were so good?
No. I just wanted to make sure we covered the credits, because that is, besides our love for Joffrey, that is one thing we are definitely known for, is Double C.
Double C?
Yeah, credit covering.
We sure have. Listeners, because we're doing this podcast immediately, I mean immediately after the episode ends, I bet if you go frame by frame, the Joffrey podcast favorite way to look at things, if you go through this frame by frame, I bet you're going to see a bunch of little hidden things that we didn't even notice. This episode, written by Dave Hill, directed by David Nutter, really good. Are you ready to go to Winterfell now, Catfish?
I am absolutely ready to go. I am just like, and you're going to love this. This is so beautiful. The nice segue. I am just like that little kid who was super excited to see who was showing up at Winterfell. And who was it? It was the Unsullied, well-training, marching in step. And I got to say, and this is honest to God, you could ask Mork. This is absolutely true. My joke was stolen just a few minutes later because I turned to Mork and I said, lucky they don't need to worry about freezing their nuts off. And sure enough, joke stolen by Tyrion.
Right. Those might have been some of the first words said in the episode, knowing that we're aiming high, as always, on Game of Thrones. I loved how evocative it was. If we go back to the very first episode ever, it's King, you know, about 20 minutes into the episode, 25 minutes into the episode, everybody's real excited because King Robert's procession is coming into Winterfell. We see Arya running around, jumping over a wagon like this little boy jumps over a wagon to get a good view of everybody. This kid climbs a tree. This is bringing us back.
It reminded me of Bran.
Yeah, exactly, climbing. I think the music is actually King Robert's theme that they played back in the very first episode ever. Loved it, loved it, loved it. I also loved all the little beats within it. I loved Arya trying to see Jon Snow and not being able to make eye contact. He didn't notice her. Perhaps that's, you know, foreshadowing of, you know, where his attention is totally this season. I loved the way the Northerners were looking at the people of different skin color with Missandei and Grey Worm and how uncomfortable it made them. And, you know, this
oh,
is...
Oh, yeah,
this,
they're like, oh, boy. They're like, is this going to be a Blue Lives Matter situation here? We are in trouble.
I mean, it feels real. It feels of consequence.
And remember, Arya sees also the Hound.
Oh, yeah. She sees Gendry.
So this is going to be big, yeah.
Loved it, loved it, loved it. Let me ask you something.
And then, of course, the dragons show up.
Yeah, I know. Did you not love the dragons coming through? But let's get to it.
At that point, I had to wonder, do the dragons have balls? And if they are, do they call them Y and Z? So there's like Dragon Ball Y and Dragon Ball Z.
Wait. I can easily edit that out to listeners, so don't worry.
You're just helping me if you take it out.
Okay, I certainly will. So, yeah, the first line is Tyrion, and I kind of thought for Tyrion, who's kind of evil Uncle Tyrion, he's been put on the back shelf, it feels like, a bit for the last couple of seasons, but they start off with him, and I thought he had a lot of moments in this episode where they're trying to focus on him. Varys, what is Varys' really role, do you think? You know, let's pause right here. Season 8, the final season ever, the first people who speak are Tyrion and Varys. What roles do you think they have in this final season?
You know, it's funny because they cover it a little bit later when, and I think this is kind of what they're getting at. I mean, it was a way to sort of transition to Jon and Daenerys, but when they're sitting there talking on the wall and they're like, you know, the young people don't really listen to the old people because they don't see what's coming. So, I mean, I think it might be, you know, the foolishness of youth ignoring the wisdom of the older people.
Okay, so the second people who talk are Jon and Daenerys. How do you feel, you know, let's go big picture. The thing they're speaking about here at the beginning of the episode, they're speaking about, hey, I warned you, the Northerners, they're distrustful. They only really like themselves. You know, a Southern queen coming up and over, you know, taking over might put them bad. Let's ignore that for now. I just want to go big picture. How did you feel about the chemistry between Jon Snow and Daenerys? Because some people have questioned if they even have chemistry. What is your thought? How did you feel in this episode?
It's weird. It doesn't, it feels very chaste. They're like teenagers who have crushes on each other, not older people who have had sex with each other. Like when they're looking down at them and they're kind of like flirting with each other, it's sort of a weird thing. To me, they don't act as if like they're in love with each other. I don't feel it.
Well, you know what I'm feeling?
And so it's weird too when like Sansa's like, did you bend the knee because you wanted to save the world or because you love her? And I thought like, is Sansa all of a sudden the three-eyed raven? Because like they didn't show any affection in front of her that we saw. I feel like this is more of like a tell rather than a show. They keep telling us people in the world are like, oh, God, they're really hot for each other. And you're like, well, okay, I don't see it. But since everyone says it, I guess it must be happening.
I want to say, as we go through this episode, I felt it more from Daenerys. You're right. It's coming across as a crush as opposed to true love. But I'm seeing it from her. Jon Snow, he's trying. He's just not very emotive, let's be honest.
No, I mean, God, I mean, if you can't, like, she is a hot queen and she's got dragons. If that doesn't lift your spirits, you go from Mopey Moperson to Grumpy Grumperson. Or how about Dead Fish, Dead Fisherson? I mean, come on. Have a little, brighten up a little bit. I mean, I know the end of the world is coming, but so are you, if you know what I mean. You can cut that out too.
No, not at all. It has to stay it. All right, so speaking.
So I noticed, though, that the three-eyed raven is watching, is like they show him watching Jon Daenerys. I wonder if he's flashed to any of the, like you think he, like the three-eyed raven, you know, when we first saw him, he was an old man. Do you think he transferred any of that dirty old man stuff to Bran? Like Bran's looking at him and then he's like flashing to them on the ocean and he's like, yep, I've seen it.
I think Bran is fascinating. I've always thought he's fascinating. I know some people kind of talk about he's one of the least interesting characters on the show. It's not like he did much in this episode, but I thought he was fascinating. And this look he gives Jon Snow and Daenerys as they walk in. You're right. It's very hard to read. And Jon Snow, you know,
he sells it.
Yeah.
He sells it. I mean, we talk about like Jon and Daenerys not really selling being in love. Like the actor playing Bran is totally giving off this otherworldly non human feel. Like, he is given it. He is great.
Right. And Jon Snow, I said he wasn't emoting much love towards Daenerys. His warmth look when he sees Bran, I love that he goes to hug Bran. Bran, he tries to have a smile creep across his three-eyed raven face. You know, it's tough for a raven to smile with a beak. And so Jon says, "Look at you, you're a man." And Bran responds, "Almost." Oh, not cool, Bran.
I know, but weirder than that is what follows is when they get into a little, like, you know, let's all introduce ourselves because we're all important people and we have to do it in a certain way. And, like, and Three-Eyed Raven, complete buzzkill. He's like, "Look, we don't have time for this."
I actually love...
I mean, another thing that the Three-Eyed Raven doesn't have time for is actually himself telling Jon what's going on. But he says there's no time for any of this bullshit.
I loved it. Let's talk about the people lined up to meet Daenerys. We have Sansa and Bran. We have Lyanna Mormont. We have Jon Royce. My boy, he got a lot of screen time today. We have Brienne and Pod and the new maester who, boy, am I blanking on his name. It'll come to me in a second. But that's kind of all the people, the recognizable characters we have here to meet Daenerys. Daenerys, as she comes in, really only Sir Friendzone, Sir Jorah, is by her side, and she comes up to meet Sansa. You've already joked about women having trouble with each other. I know some people don't like it. They want everything to be wonderful, but I think if you look at it from Sansa's perspective, a lot of her kind of, you know, disapproving really makes sense, don't you think?
I mean, yes. I'm just the problem with this show, I guess, and it's understandable, right? Is we know how much of a threat the White Walkers are, but no one else seems to believe it. So it's just tiring for me. I wish they could move past this. It's tiring for me that, like, we have to have this fight, that Jon has to convince other people, because we know we're going to get past that at some point. So it's tiring me for this stuff to be going on. It completely makes sense from the character's point of view. I'm not saying that. It's just tiring for the viewer who knows that, like, this is a serious thing, and, like, all this other this bullshit fighting, and we're going to have Sansa beef with another woman. I made a joke about that earlier, but it's like, I know, we don't have time for that. We got more important stuff going on.
Well, you know, you sound like the Three-Eyed Raven right now. I'm trying to talk about this beef.
I am.
He's like, "Listen, we don't have time for this." And I felt like he was almost snapping at Daenerys. "We don't have time for this. Guess what?" I'm going to quote him. "The Night King has your dragon. He's one of them now. You know, hello. The wall is fallen."
Oh, yeah.
"The dead march south." And he looks PO'd. And it's a bit like, I actually love the fact that Bran interrupted there, because as a story point, it was like, let's get going. Let's get moving. We're jumping. We're finding out
information.
Sorry, let me go on for a second. We're finding out information. We're kind of jumping into the story. Hey, there are a lot of introductions, and I'm complaining they're being short, but suddenly we're in this meeting, and Sansa's giving us new information. When we found that the wall had fallen, we asked everybody to retreat to Winterfell. We're setting up this poor kid, Lord Umber, who's going to go out a real pain. Painful way later. He's like, "You know, I don't have enough wagons." They're like, "Dude, go get the wagons and horses and get everybody here, moron." I love that.
Yeah, Lord Umber. Lord Umber, like 6 years old.
I'm saying, get on with it, dude. You're talking about how serious this problem is. Let's go. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. But
I don't mind the beefing. Like, I mean, we're about to get to little Lyanna, who's going to also kick ass, take names again. But it just seems to me like there's only 6 episodes left. There's enough plot to go around with us having to do this. And it just makes me tired having to anticipate this kind of problem again. Maybe if they hadn't sold this to us all last season, that same exact thing, Sansa in conflict with somebody, but they did that. So now I feel like, don't do it to me again, when I know it's just going to get resolved eventually. And hopefully, you know,
the Night
in
King,
a way that makes more sense than last year's.
The Night King's going to resolve a lot of stuff, buddy.
All right. Well, you know, that, like they said in the previews, like, it looks like the Night King is coming next week. So maybe that will take care of a lot of things. But I can't imagine they would set all this up just to knock it down next week. So
Hold on. What if the Night King has a bit of Three-Eyed Raven in him? He's like, "You know what? I could attack Winterfell now, but they're fighting amongst themselves. Let's hang back and let them kill each other. Then we'll attack. It'll be so much easier."
The way Cersei's doing it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, at this this point, you think that they would believe, like, Bran. We still haven't seen Bran. Like, presumably Bran was the one who said to Sansa, hey, Littlefinger's the one who's a problem here, not Arya. We didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, like, I mean, I see why they want to restrict it a little bit, because Bran's like a cheat code. Like, they could basically skip over a lot of stuff if people just said to Bran, hey, what's the deal? And then he told them what the deal was. So maybe that's why they're ignoring it.
You know, George R. R. Martin could finish these books so quickly if somebody just went, hey, Bran, what's happened and what's going to happen? And he just, you know.
He's going to fill it out. I love it. All right, so let's go to the meeting.
Yeah, I liked Little Lady Lyanna. I liked, you know, you're right. Do we have time for Little Lady Lyanna's, slapping people around? No. But
hell yes. Every single episode, I'll take it. She's so good. She's like, we made you King of the North. And I mean, here, see, I don't mind if she is the one who doesn't believe it. She's not family, but, you know. And also, she doesn't have the three eye. She doesn't have the three eye raven to like give her his magic eight ball. But that's great. There's my favorite. I think my favorite line. There were some good zingers in this episode.
Oh yeah.
One of my favorites was in this one when Lyanna said, "What do dragons eat?" And of course, I was saying it at the same time that Daenerys was saying it. Whatever they want.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that was Sansa saying that, and that's after evil Uncle Tyrion comes out. It comes out and drops his, "Hey, everybody, don't worry. The Lannister army is coming too." Oh boy, he's got a lot of L's,
you know,
Uncle Tyrion.
I could have told him, maybe, you know, there's a lot going on right now. Maybe let people get used to the idea of other stuff first. Like, he, as Sansa says later on, like, I used to think you were the most clever person, and now you're starting to show me that maybe you are not. Like, I also thought, bad move by Tyrion.
Let me say, that proves they're really a married couple, because after, you know, after the honeymoon wears off, the wife is just going to rip you a new one.
Well, it's good to know your experience.
Hey.
Now, I will
say, I'm single, ladies.
Are you done with this scene? Because I have one more thing to say about this scene.
No, just hit it.
Well, you know, I was watching this with Mork and with Ms. Catfish. And after the scene, Ms. Catfish turned to me and she said, "That's Sansa. She's a little too big for her britches."
Uh-oh. Does that mean that she's should be on the death watch list? When somebody gets too confident
she just thinks she's a little bit too superior and lording over things. I think she thinks she's taken this lady of the North a little bit too far.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we leave the meeting and then we go out to just set up. Hey, they mined all this dragon glass last year. Now we got to shovel. We've shoveled a lot of things on this show, and now we got to shovel it into Master Armorer Gendry, who's going to be, you know, making all our weapons. You know, he got a great promotion, didn't he? You know, I hope he's charging pretty well.
I mean, considering his birth, I think that's the least job he should have.
Oh, okay. Okay, so now
I think he could do even better than that.
We get to the reunion of the married couple we've already talked a lot about. Jon Royce, he's there. He's not serving Robin Arryn anymore. Now he's, for some reason, answering Lady of Winterfell, Sansa Stark. And so Tyrion and Sansa's reunion, how did you feel about it? Did you feel it was good? It did have this incredible zinger where Sansa's right again. She's like, boy, I thought you were clever. Moron. I love Sansa knowing that the Lannister army wouldn't come. But
that, however, wasn't the best zinger of that scene.
Oh, man, let's hear it.
The best zinger of that scene was when Tyrion talks about Joffrey's wedding. Last time he saw her, when, as we all know, Joffrey faked a horrible death, and we'll come back later on the season. But he said it was not a great wedding or something, and she said it had its moments.
Oh, that was so good. That was good. That made me laugh. Loved it so much.
It was good because it was subtle. The other one was obvious zing at him, but, like, you know, this was more of a subtle zing, and she didn't really, like, nail it, but I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. So there was certainly no chemistry. Believe it or not, some fans have wanted these two to end up together. This seed, if you trust this seed, the wedding's over. This couple is over. Not going to happen, I would say.
Oh, God, no. No, absolutely not. But I think that, I mean, what I think... I think the thing that is important here is, although Jon had some experience with Tyrion before everything went down, Sansa has had experience when Tyrion essentially had all the power and he saw that she was a decent human being. And so I think that at least she may fight with Daenerys, but she won't distrust Tyrion, I don't think.
Okay, so this scene ends. I mentioned how much Bran intrigues me and I love it. Sansa leaves Tyrion. Tyrion looks down and who is staring at him? But three-eyed Raven, baby. Three-eyed Crow Bran. Love it. What is Bran? You know,
he took...
Sorry, I was going to say, what is Bran? Why is he looking at evil Uncle Tyrion? Does evil Uncle Tyrion have a... You know, does he have a role to play in the end game? I don't know. But the fact that Bran is interested in him, loved it.
Well, I think Bran, after Bran did his little flyby, his vision quest to see what Jon and Daenerys were doing on the boat, he also saw Tyrion looking wistful outside the door. So, right. You know, I mean, the thing about Bran is once people know what he can do, he doesn't even need to go into their past. All he has to do is look at them, and they're imagining he's seeing the worst.
Love it. Love it. Love it. We get to the reunion. So many people have been wanting Jon Snow, Arya. Love that they kind of almost had a fake out from me where, you know, they're standing apart from each other and they're almost kind of talking coldly. But then when the smile comes over Arya's face, I loved it. I got warm feelings about these double S's.
Double S's?
The evil's early Starks. Even I could enjoy it. But what's funny is there's even a little bit of tension between these two, isn't it?
Yes, it's all part of this. It's all part of the tension. once again, Sansa's going to big britch it up with whoever comes into her territory.
But the sisters who did have trouble last year, Arya's trying to explain to Jon, you know, Sansa's one of the smartest people I met. She's also telling Jon, hey, you got to think about, we're doing this because our family. And it's like, remember, Jon, you know, we're doing this because we're family. And Jon doesn't know the truth yet that while he's family, he's not immediate family. Oh.
Well, I mean, the other thing that's important is, and I guess that, you know, they're going to lay that out as family. But again, for those of us who know that, like, somebody can rule or all of us can die, like, we got to band together or die apart. It's sort of a little bit, I think it can be frustrating, even though it makes sense for the characters.
It does. It does. And so these characters have not seen each other since season 1, episode 2, when Jon gave her needle. She shows him he notices that she still has needle. She notices he's got a Valyrian steel sword. And then they end with another hug. People love that. I bet fans love the fact that, once again, at least for now, they seem like family. We're going to cut down south, which, admittedly, in this first shot...
To your favorite duo.
This first shot doesn't look too cold, does it? It's my boy Qyburn and his lady, Queen Cersei.
Yeah, and it turns out that... kind of not new information, but sort of clarifies the what we suspected from last year. Cersei is on team Double W.
Double W?
Yeah, White Walker. Cersei's on team White Walker.
Right. She hears the...
Qyburn, I've got horrible news.
Right.
And her response, good.
Yeah, she smiles when she hears the dead are through the wall. Oh, love it. But Qyburn understands the trouble. But of course, Qyburn, you know, he looks at her and then he looks out at the Iron Fleet. Uncle Euron's bringing the Golden Company. Uncle Euron, he has kind of a big role in this so far, too. And we meet possibly.
Well, for Cersei's sake, I hope he had a big role, if you know what I mean.
We meet possibly our only new character of season 8, Harry Strickland, the leader of the Gold Company. What do you think about the Golden Company here? And we really don't see them other than they stand in formation on a boat. Even if the boats sway, they're going to just stand there ready to go.
I just think we've got so many great names. If you think about all the great names in this show, I just feel like at a certain point someone got lazy. We got Euron, we've got Cersei, we've got everything, and then we come with Harry Strickland. He sounds like a CPA.
Harry Strickland was my favorite member of One Direction.
Well, there you go. And now he's still wearing the gold.
Okay, we do have a shot to show us, hey, what's happened to Yara? Well, she's the prisoner of Uncle Euron. And, you know, I almost feel like, is it okay if we just jump through this section? You know, oh, wait a minute. Uncle Euron's...
It's not that long, but...
Yeah, but no, listen to me. Uncle Euron's got Yara. Oh, he's got Yara. Theon, you know what? We've got to save Yara. We've got to save Yara. No, we're not saving Yara. Hit me in the place where I don't have any privates anymore. I'm going to headbutt you, and now I'm the leader of the good members of the Iron Island. And Zach Cram, I don't like to give anybody else any credit other than us here at the Joffrey Podcast, but a great article on The Ringer written by Zach Cram talked about how at times it doesn't feel like there are any consequence. And so I am going to jump ahead a bit. And I kind of thought Theon's rescue of Yara, like, that was so simple. You know, if that's all it took, it's almost like Jorah's grayscale. Like, okay, you got the grayscale. Let me exfoliate you. You're cured. Here in this episode, Yara's freed almost immediately. And I know a lot of people got killed. A lot of pirates got killed. But it felt too easy for me. So what did you
think? Yeah, well,
what
for sure, there's lots of boats around. For sure, that's craziness. I mean, I did enjoy... The first scene was fun. Mostly the first scene was fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just love this character of Euron.
Yeah, he's
And
great.
I know you do, too, because you take him as sort of... He's sort of your spirit animal. Euron is your spirit animal. But there's more talk about balls, and then he says he's going to talk about how he's going to nail the queen. That's fun. I mean, the other thing is, okay, let's get Theon back up to Winterfell. He's an important character. We've known him since the beginning, so this is sort of a redemption story for Theon.
Well, yeah, you're getting him back involved with everything. I see that.
Yeah, the only thing they thought was weird, and it only works because this is a show and you're cutting away.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine in real life this happening, is that Theon and Yara are on the boat,
mm-hmm,
sailing in the middle of the ocean. And she says, you want to go back to Winterfell, don't you? And he says, yes, I do. And she says, what is dead will never die? And he says, what is dead will never die? And then they hug.
Yeah.
And then what does he do? Does he jump off the boat and start swimming? I mean, like, he can't really leave at this point. It's like awkward, like, okay, well, I guess... I'll just go below deck for a couple weeks or something. I mean, it was like a parting goodbye, and he's not going nowhere.
You know what? Sometimes it's hard to disembark from a cruise, and so...
Yeah, I mean, really, he really should. Okay, then, I would have been perfect if they just stood there awkwardly for a few seconds, and then he said, this is the comedic version. They stand there, and they look at each other, look at him, and he goes, all right, and then just jumps in the water.
He's good at just jumping overboard. Yeah, that's kind of his move.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm going to swim to Winterfell. What is dead will never die.
All right, well, let's get to it. Euron introduces good old Harry Strickland, member of One Direction, to Queen Cersei, and then he wants what he wants. He wants his queen. He wants to totally get busy with Queen Cersei. And
he does, and my question to you is, I mean, I guess we can jump to that part now because that comes right after it, even though there's an intervening scene. But my question to you is, why do you think Cersei does it?
That is a great question. I think, you know, these two are very, you know, they're both looking out for number one. And I think Cersei,
right,
we need to give her credit. She still does kind of need Euron's ships. And so I did, you know, I think she's not ready to cut him completely yet. And so, okay, let's take him to bed. We should give a tip of our cap to book readers in that the Golden Company in the books, it's famous that they have elephants. And so Cersei kind of lets the book readers, who takes the book reader perspective when she keeps saying, man, I was looking forward to the elephants. There were no elephants. Damn it, I wanted
it's
elephants.
Really funny. It's really funny. And I don't care how big Euron is. He's not going to measure up to elephants.
He won't fill the void.
And that's when Cersei says another one of my favorite lines from this episode, where she says, you might be the most arrogant man I've met. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Dating is the first hint.
I was going to say dating advice from Queen Cersei. Yeah.
This
hey,
is the
guys.
First hint that I got that you might have a shot with Cersei.
Hey. Bubba. How could you be so cold?
I mean, there were people. We're coming up on another scene where it's clear that some of these ladies on Game of Thrones are expressing a direct desire to you. So unless you have anything more to say about Cersei and Euron and their happily bliss,
their one night stand,
let's move on to.
Do you want to go to Bronn's brothel?
Bronn friends. Yeah, Bronn and friends. Three ladies. Mork was complaining. He said he should take his time, and I said that itself proved he waited too long, because if he had taken his time, he wouldn't have even seen them naked.
So many people I've seen online say, well, how is Game of Thrones going to have their, you know, requisite sexy scenes here in season 8 when there's so much to get to? Sure enough, right off the bat, here, let me pause it so I can see exactly how deep we are into the episode. So we are,
so to speak.
Looks like we're 24 minutes into the episode and suddenly it's time for an orgy. Heck yeah.
I love it. I love it. Sadly, it gets broken up. And yet, as I was saying, another one of these ladies expresses that she is Bubba material because she says she likes older dudes when she comes on to Qyburn.
Do you think that is foreshadowing? Are we going to cut to an episode later on and see Qyburn totally getting busy with the mountain watching?
Oh, my God. It's like, well, you know what? These poor ladies, right? I mean, like, business has really gone down since Mace by itself went away.
Well, yeah. Also, boy, this foreplay talk is really not the greatest, huh? Yeah, everybody came back burnt from the dragons. They don't have eyelids anymore.
All right. Ladies, I'm trying to focus.
Okay. Do you want to talk about the mission that Qyburn and Cersei are giving Bronn? Bronn is supposed to use the crossbow, evil Uncle Tyrion's weapon of choice, to kill the Lannister boys. Will Bronn do it? Would Bronn do it? I'll answer first. I think he would. I doubt he'll be successful. It doesn't feel natural that one of the Lannister boys would go out from Bronn killing him. But I think he would. I just don't think he will. Where do you take it on Bronn's secret mission here, Catfish?
Well, I think that's a good call, the way you put it. I think he would, but he wouldn't get to do it. But I kind of think, you know, the thing about Bronn is he's always looked out for himself.
Yeah.
And maybe I just – since he seems like kind of a lovable scalawag, I don't feel like we've ever seen him actually – maybe he just hasn't had a chance – actually turn on a quote-unquote friend for money. So, you know, just liking him so much, I tend to, you know, project onto him that he wouldn't really do that to a friend of his.
I was going to say, we're going to have to see. One thing that I think is especially interesting is Bronn at first thinks that this plan Cersei's sending him on is to kill the queen, but Qyburn says no, Queen Cersei has other plans for her. Oh my God, how's Cersei going to take out Daenerys? Love Cersei planning ahead. You know, guys, you got to plan ahead.
I love it.
If you want to be successful. Love this.
I mean, I mean, her plan right now, it's kind of, you have to say she's got a lot more foresight, and it is, even though she's team
White Walker.
Yeah. She doesn't trust in them. She's like, okay, White Walkers, you may be an undead force coming down from the mountains, gathering more victims / members of your army as you come, but I'm still going to make contingency plans.
We see the Karstarks coming back to Winterfell. We see the Karstarks show back up. I wonder if we're being reintroduced to her so that she can die.
Oh, wait.
Oh, sorry. Did you have another point?
Bubba, just one more question. And again, this is not – I wondered about this and obviously did not have encyclopedic knowledge. Someone might know the answer to this. Now – the crossbow that Tyrion killed his father with, presumably he didn't take that with him. So I was wondering if that crossbow was the exact crossbow that was used to kill Tywin.
I think that's what Cersei would have wanted to use. I just don't know if we're going to find out. So I would say, you know what? I would say by the time this podcast posts, someone will have done the frame by frame and been able to figure it out.
Okay. I wondered, and knowing their attention to detail, I would, if I had to place a bet, I would heavily wager that it is the exact one. Not, if not the exact one, one created to look like it was just the exact one. I was surprised they were going for both. I thought that Cersei would still like to get Jaime under her thumb again.
Right.
I guess she's like, you've gone against me too many times. I thought it was just Tyrion, so I was surprised that she mentioned Jaime too.
Yeah, we're going to have to see where this goes. I doubt Bronn can kill either of them. Might he try? Yes, but I just don't see it just quite yet. All right, so hey, we've got three old men here. We've got Varys, we've got Davos, and we've got Tyrion. And Davos is saying, hey, listen, you know, they love Jon Snow. The Northerners love Jon Snow. Why don't we hook this couple up and get them married? What do you think? Is it good advice?
I mean, if she is still going to be the queen, supposedly the one in charge, I mean, I don't know, you know, how things would work. Presumably, I mean, my assumption is that just because she gets married, she's still, according to her, she doesn't know yet that John has the better claim, that he would still be in a secondary position to her. So I don't see how this would help the North at all. I don't help the people, the important people of the North, to accept her more if they got married. I don't think it would change anyone's mind one bit. What do you think?
You're right. I don't think it would either. I want to say that it's tough for us to get to feedback, but we do these podcasts live on Twitter, live on Facebook, live on YouTube, and good old Raymond Charles, who's going to survive season 8, he tweeted at us back when we were talking about Bronn. He said, Bronn, in that scene with the three ladies, such an actor, dedicated to his craft.
I know, poor guy. He has to suffer. He has to suffer, but you know, he does it for his art.
Now, one of our most important characters, Kono, comes up, and he's the one who tells Daenerys that these dragons, they aren't eating.
They're on a double D.
Double D?
Yeah, dragon diet. Remember, I said that at the beginning.
Who could remember that far back? I'm going to have to do a rewatch.
Right, I can't remember.
This moment, just like I said, I loved Bran going ahead and saying, hey, guess what? Guess what? Your dragon's dead. The Night King's got him. He's on their team. We got no time. If you're going to make Jon Snow ride a dragon, I love that here. Once again, let me pause the clicker here and see that 35 minutes into the episode, it's guess what? We're just going to go ahead and go. I love it. It's like, let's get going. Let's go.
I got to say, watching it, he must have a natural kind of affinity for it. Because, I mean, I thought the dragons were supposed to recognize, like, okay, this is someone who has the right to ride me. And that dragon totally tried to spill him off.
Several times, yeah. I mean, there's no way. He would have fallen off 100 times. There's no way. There are no handles, dude.
For sure. He's holding on with one hand, and that thing is going sideways and doing dipsy-doos. Man.
So were you surprised? Were you excited? Were you thrilled that the former king in the North, Aegon Targaryen, is riding a dragon?
I would have. And again, I'm always the one who's like, this is so dark. This is so dark. We need some comedy. We had some good comedy tonight. I would have liked it to have been a triumphant moment when instead it seemed like it was kind of played for humor because he was almost always falling off. It didn't feel like a triumphant moment for me at all. Did you feel that way?
No, I didn't feel that way. Well, it felt like a moment that had to happen. And what I'm saying is positive about it is they just got on with it. We're not going to make people wait. We're just going to get on with it.
But shouldn't it be? I feel like they missed an opportunity. And that is that, again, like I said, like you're only supposed to be able to ride this thing if they sense that you have the right blood. And so then it should be more like the thing completely responds to him. And maybe Daenerys is like, wait, what's going on? Why is this so the dragon reacting this way rather than the way I would expect? And that could have built an interesting story beat and been triumphant for John. Instead, they just made it a kind of a joke.
Well, speaking of jokes, John is trying to get busy, and these dragons, now what do you think these dragons are thinking? Are they thinking, this is incest, stop it, guys, or why do the dragons keep staring so much at him? I loved it. I laughed out loud. I thought it was a good little moment.
Okay,
but
that part is good and it's funny. I think one dragon was saying to the other one, I am tired of all this double S.
Double S?
Yeah, shorty smooching.
You know what? Hey, you've heard the phrase doing it for the shorties. How about shorties doing it?
I think the dragons approve. I think the dragons are like, yeah, do it. You are our pet.
Love it. Want to shout out some people who are listening to us live on Facebook. Tiffany.
Love it.
Tiffany wrote, cool, it was awesome tonight. She loved GOT. And then Brandon wrote, you know, because of all the snaps, Brandon was like, was this Game of Thrones or Late Night at the Apollo?
There was some good zingaroos tonight.
Love it. So Gendry has made the Hound a dragon glass axe. And who walks in but somebody who has history with both of them, Arya Stark. For some reason, I don't know why. I can't think of the reason why. I thought that the Hound and Arya were going to hug it out. You know, maybe that's another old HBO show, but they did not hug it out at all, did they? They just talked smack to each other.
The funny thing is, I know this is going to mark me as strange, as if there aren't enough things that mark me as strange, but I was more excited for their reunion than John and Arya's reunion.
Oh,
like,
man.
I was like, because John and Arya haven't been together in a long time, and I know they have a history, but we didn't see a lot of that history. We saw some, but like, I mean, Arya and the Hound, they hit the road. They were a comedy duo for so long. Like, I was like, yeah, give me some more of that Hound and the Arya.
Let me pitch this to you. Okay, so which your two choices are Gendry or the Hound? Which one was flirting with Arya and said the line, you're a cold little bitch, aren't you?
It was for sure the Hound. And then he said, that's probably why you're still alive.
Loved
and it was so good. Those are the props, you know what I mean? Like, from swearing like a sailor hound, that pretty much is flirting. That's as lighthearted as it gets. If Arya really knew him really well, she would slap him for being so fresh.
Fresh. Did you feel sparks coming from Arya and Gendry? I thought this was the most romantic they've ever been.
Oh, for sure. They were definitely flirting it up. That was really interesting to see. I mean, it still feels a little weird because Gendry is a full grown man and Arya and Maisie is small, so it still feels a little like To Catch a Predator. But I guess I'm okay with it. It's just her stature and age, her real age.
Well, her real age is apparently 22. But if you're saying Chris Hansen is staying at Winterfell, I get that totally.
He is. Gendry comes home and he's like, so what were you doing? Now, we didn't have time to pause. We had to do this right away. And some of the stuff, I was furiously making notes. Were you able to figure out what was the weapon that Arya wants Gendry to fashion for her? It almost looked like a detachable lightsaber to me, but I didn't look at it closely.
No, I agree. It's like a staff which you can take apart with, I assume, a dragon glass blade on one end of the staff. I'm sure we'll find out what this is, but yeah, I couldn't make it out at all. But it's good to see these two together. Should we predict they're gonna be together when all is said and done?
Well, I mean, are you the one who thinks they're not gonna be you think they're both gonna be alive?
No, I've actually always thought. I've generally always thought that Arya was going to be dead, to be honest. I know that's cold, but that's what I've always kind of thought. But maybe because they're bothering to show this kind of flirtiness and interaction, maybe they will end up together. Maybe Arya will end up, you know, the lady of some castle, just like her father, Ned Stark, told her she'd be back in season one. And she was like, no, that's not me. What if it turns out that is her? You know, who's to say?
Interesting. Well, I mean, there was at a point when I told Mork, you know, early in the episode when when Sansa and Tyrion were talking, and he's like, "Where is Arya?" And I said, "What do you mean? We just saw her. She was faceless manning both of them, both Tyrion and Sansa in that scene."
You know what? That shows your range as an actor. She's like, "Everybody's getting nominated. It's my turn to get nominated." And she also gives a good flirting line, like, "You don't know other rich girls. Hello." That's a good. You know, sparks are flying there.
Boom, boom. Yes, believe me, in that one scene had more flirting and sexual tension than the entirety of the Jon and Daenerys scenes.
Oh, how could you be so cold? How could you be so cold, Catfish? So
speaking of cold, we go back to one of my, you know, my favorite. You know how I am. I'm going to complain about this until this thing is stupidly resolved.
Okay.
Now we have Sansa and Jon, so they're going to fight about blah, 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 blah. The only thing that's really important in this is that, you know, before the season, we did the 8 most important characters in Game of Thrones season 8, and one of them was Robette Glover, and it turns out he a fraidy cat.
I'll stand behind you now and always, except tomorrow.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I just flashed on it now. So let's talk about it now, even though we already jumped over the Euron section and Yara. Yara's plan is that the White Walkers can't cross an ocean.
Correct.
Now, why can't they cross an ocean? They don't know how to sail?
Well, once again, well, who's to say? You know, people can learn stuff later in life. You can't teach old whites new tricks. But in other words, before, the Night King didn't have a dragon. So why doesn't he cross the ocean? I'd tell him, hey, cross, go have fun. And so,
well, not only that, let's say for some reason, I don't know why, they can't sail. They seem to be, some of them seem to have reasoning skills. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Night King himself has a plan and is smart with the way he does things. So certainly, they could try to conscript non-White Walkers to do the sailing for them while they ride along. So I'm just wondering if they're scared of water. So I probably should know that and feel ashamed, but I don't. So
haven't seen them, you know, at Hardhome. They didn't jump into the water to go attack Jon Snow, as far as we could tell. At the Frozen Lake battle, they waited till the lake froze before they jumped in. And so one thing we predicted so many months ago, I think everybody predicted, but we predicted it right after the episode. Samuel Tarly meeting Queen Daenerys, hashtag not a fan. Not a fan at all of Queen Daenerys. Sam's sadness over the father who he really had trouble with, but then the brother who he seemed at least cool with. You know, he was like, hey, now I'll be able to go back and visit my family and my house now that my brother's lord. Not so much. What did you think of What did you think of this scene?
Yipes. First of all, I was relieved because finally Samwell admits that he's nothing but a dirty thief.
Yes. He needs a pardon, doesn't he?
Yeah, he needs a pardon, and then he's going to spill it all. Is that it? Is that all really all that he stole? Except for Gilly's heart, of course.
We're probably forgetting some things. He stole Gilly herself. How about that? And the baby from good old Uncle Craster.
Come on. He's a thief from way back. Actually, it's very emotional, and then that comes up later on. So now we see there's going to be a conflict with Samwell and Daenerys and maybe, you know, whatever. Although, of course, with Samwell's power is very limited. So he's not going to really start anything unless he – you know, it feels almost like the combination of you're the real king, you're not merciless might work on Jon. But on the other hand, it's like Jon knows. I mean, I make fun of, you know, mopey, depressed, you know, 5'4", 100 pounds, Jon Snow all the time. But the one thing that he's got completely right is that nothing matters now except for killing the White Walkers. I don't care what Daenerys did. She's gonna
help
us kill the White Walkers.
Yeah.
So I don't see how any of this talk from Sansa or Samwell or anything like that is gonna stop anything, because he's already proven he doesn't care about bending the knee. He doesn't care about being in charge. He just wants to save the people who are not undead.
Let's get to that scene, because this is a scene people have been waiting years, years, like we've all been waiting years to see. John being told the truth. What did you think of that scene? Did you think that he went too quickly? Did you think that he went, you know, that he accepted this thing that Sam was telling him kind of on face value? If I were John, I might have gone, what is this craziness you're talking about? What? Huh?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. I mean, but, you know, I'm complaining about all these obstacles they're putting in the way of us getting to, like, the important stuff. Mm-hmm. And here they did it. Here they said, we don't have enough time for him to, like, dick around and go to Bran and say, like, is this the truth? How do you know? Blah, 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 blah. So we just get to him accepting it. So I don't mind for that. I was really impressed by the scene. Like, I thought his reaction to it was great, and his, like, you know, that was my father, and then Samuel comes back with, you know, the important information. No, he was saving your ass because you'd be dead otherwise. You know, also, I don't know why, you know, maybe it's just because we have been obsessed for this for so long, but I can't believe that John didn't flash to, and maybe they could have mentioned this scene and this would have satisfied you as well as me, but he didn't flash to, like, Ned saying before he left for King's Landing, like, when I get back, I'm going to tell you. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was, like, important information.
He said, so when I see you again, we'll speak of your mother.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, so I would have wondered about my parentage enough. I mean, obviously, you know, if we trace what John has been through, obviously he's had a lot of more important things on his mind and his tongue.
Hey, hello.
So, but I didn't mind him sort of accepting it. And who knows, maybe he hasn't really fully accepted it yet. But let's move on. My God, there's only five episodes left. If the only real thing that happened here besides table setting was, okay, John now knows that he is the one true king, then let's accept that without him denying it for too long.
I understand. I agree in so many ways. I do want to say that I loved Bran's line about, Sam, you got to go tell him, you got to go tell him. And Sam's like, well, you're his brother. And Bran's like, he ain't my brother. he ain't my brother. And so
But Bran was a super fraidy cat.
Yeah.
Although, and then Sam makes a fun joke where he says, you know, I put it together because I read this information and Bran has whatever Bran has.
See, this is going to be, you know, I know we have so much bigger fish to fry, but the fact that Sansa has trouble with Daenerys, that Sam now has trouble with Daenerys, these are people who mean a lot to Jon, and I think we are going to have some great relationship troubles and drama this final season, and I'm down with it.
Okay. I'm down on it. So.
Okay, let's get to my favorite 50 minutes into the episode, my favorite moment in it.
I know what it was.
We get to last hearth. We see Tormund.
We get to see the double W is back.
Double W?
Yeah, the Wyndham Wizard.
Tormund! Beric, they survived the destroying of the wall at Eastwatch.
They did.
They're going into the last hearth, which is the Umber Castle. And what's funny is we talked about how these trailers were dark and, like, boy, you really can't see much. Was this scene dark or what? Boy, I could barely see anything as they were walking around.
I was just about to say to you, there was about 20 seconds where I thought, like, and there wasn't a lot of noise either. I mean, there were some, but I thought, has my cable gone out? Like, this is ridiculous. It was completely dark. But then, of course, we had a nice, funny bit right after the WW comes across Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah, and Ed right, from the Night's Watch. I loved it. That was hilarious.
Right, when he's like, oh, he's got blue eyes. And then the Wyndham Wizard said, I've always had blue eyes.
So good. So yeah. Good. But this moment was creepy. This is a moment that, you know, I don't like, you know, I don't normally like horror movies. I don't like creepy, scary things. But little Lord Umber pinned up on the wall there.
Oh, my God.
With the spinning design, the White Walker symbol, possibly a symbol of the Children of the Forest behind him. And then when Tormund was talking and his eyes turned blue, that was friggin' awesome. That was so gosh darn awesome.
That was a great jump scare. Oh, my God. It was so, so awesome. That was really good.
And should I say that in this episode, am I correct that outside of some of Euron's pirates, the only character who died, the only character whose name we knew was this little Lord Umber who died. Everybody else survived the first episode. So we got five, you know, everybody made it at least one episode into season eight. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah. Then we just end up with, it's funny because you think, oh my God, that's going to be the most interesting thing. But because of the history and because the beautiful, like you said, the echoing of season one, episode one, at the beginning of season eight, episode one. And then we have the nice button with season eight, episode one, known as an episode has no name, has nice symmetry with Bran getting pushed out the window.
Love it.
In season one, episode one. So good.
Tormund says if the horses that Ed brought from the Night's Watch survive, they can arrive at Winterfell before the Night King. How are you going to get it in front of the Night King and the marching army of the dead? This seems crazy.
Well, this is what I'm wondering. Like, this army has a long tail to it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
It's so big now, it probably could be like half a mile or something, and it's also very wide. So what, you're going to sneak up behind them and then ride all the way around them? Seems improbable, and yet we're just going to have to accept that faith because, you know, we see in the previews for next week.
Bet they get there. Spoiler alert. So Catfish, our final scene, a hooded figure rides for Winterfell. I knew as soon as I saw it was going to be the Kingslayer, Jaime Lannister.
I absolutely knew it as well.
He gets into Winterfell. He's taking his hood off. He's getting a lay of the land. And who has been waiting for him and who does he make eye contact with? But the kid who started all the trouble back in the very first episode, the three-eyed Raven Stark. Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
So good.
It makes me want to binge the show. I wish we could do it right now, but that's it. That's season eight, episode one. An episode has no name. Catfish, are you ready? Five episodes left. That's it.
So good. I am so excited.
Everybody, write to us on at Double PHQ on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.com/DoublePHQ. We want to hear from you. For everybody here, for the Joffrey podcast, because we've gone
we've got to do that. Listen, I know we've gone long, but we cannot go without doing our Joffrey of the week. People are back now and they know must have their Joffrey of the week.
They have
so
to.
As you know, for those of you who don't know, since Joffrey is the greatest character in the history of literature and fiction and the world and the cosmos, every week we try to name a person, living, dead, real, fictional, or sometimes a notion or an idea that represents one aspect. People can't obviously represent more than one aspect of Joffrey. And so for this week, I thought.
Yeah.
And people who don't know, haven't listened to the Joffrey podcast, may not be aware that Joffrey went away what most people thought were too soon.
Too soon.
But in season eight, he is going to make his triumphant return.
Yeah.
He may have looked like he was gone, but he's going to make a triumphant professional return, and he's going to take all the prizes and all the money. And for that, my Joffrey of the week is Zion Williamson.
That son of a gun. Oh, he helped me so much. So much. Son of a gun.
We thought he was dead. He left early, but he will return to the NBA.
Thanks a lot.
So, Bubba, who is your Joffrey of the week?
Catfish, my Joffrey of the week is somebody who everybody knows is a double L.
Double L?
Lady lover. Just like Joffrey was loved by Sansa, he was loved by Margaery, he was loved by the people, Tiger Woods loved a lot of ladies. And so Tiger Woods came back victorious. After everybody thought he was through, he came back and won the Masters today. So because of that, Tiger Woods, my Joffrey of the week. I wonder if Joffrey likes eating at Denny's and Pancake House as much as Tiger Woods did.
I mean, he's probably been doing it. The world equivalent. He's been to Hot Pies Inn several times.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he has. Everybody, please give us some reviews on the ways you download this iTunes, this podcast. If you listen on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, anything, give us some reviews. Once again, reach out to us. We want you eligible to win some of our prizes, and we want you to be a double L who's going to survive season 8. So you can reach us at WPHQ on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.com/WPHQ. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67 on Twitter. And there's only 5 more times left that I get to say, we'll talk to you next week on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
4 different breakups edition.